Hello and welcome to Locobones Knows, gaming podcast 1 million subscriber special. I am joined today by a very special guest, Jeremy Greer. Say hello to the people, Jeremy.
All digi, no potty, Locobones Knows Gaming. Hey, everybody.
All digi, no potty.
All digi,
thank you very much. Welcome to the show, Jeremy. The listeners are glad to have you back, Locobones Knows Gaming Podcast. Everyone's happy to have you here, but we're not here to talk the digi, no potty usual stuff.
Sure.
We're here for a very specific purpose. My very special guest, Jeremy Greer.
What you been playing?
Today.
What's the news?
On Locobones. Today on Locobones Knows Gaming Podcast, we are talking about none other than the legend of Zelda. I okay. forgot what it was while I was saying it. The Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild. That's
yes.
Listener of Locobones Knows Gaming Podcast. We are doing a special episode about The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, the popular game for the Wii U home console, as well as the Nintendo Switch hybrid console. Of course, I'm Chris. This is Jeremy.
Yep.
Hey, everybody. This is Monster of the Week Patreon stuff. You're here. You know the deal.
Yep.
If you like this, if you know somebody who would like this, let them know. Tell them about the Patreon. Tell them we're covering the Legend of Belda or whatever.
Yeah. Definitely point this content at them and say, like, this is what they're really good at so that they can get the full idea of what we're doing for the people.
So we've toyed around with the idea of doing, random one-off things that weren't necessarily covering a show or a movie or anything, like where we specifically sat down to watch a thing or whatever. Just random topics. And as it so happened, we're all stuck at home. And as it so happened, Mr. Jeremy Greer, special guest of Locobones Knows Game Podcast, he decided to just get real, real deep into The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
It's true. I did.
For me, it seemed like it was out of nowhere. Because you were not on that train whatsoever. I don't even know what you were playing before this, but you were playing it for a while, if I'm not mistaken. And then suddenly this happened.
Hollow Knight, I think, was directed.
Hollow Knight,
this.
That's right.
Yeah. And I was feeling pretty. I had that gamer hangover sensation of you finish a game that you really, really adore, and I had this with The Legend of Zelda too. So like this is mm-hmm. I went right from I was just mini hangovers, Jeremy. Like you try a bunch of stuff and nothing really quite clicks. You just kind of want to play the old thing, which led to me impulse buying. A bunch of shit on the Switch, including Link's Awakening, Breath of the Wild, all this other stuff. And yeah, just booted up Breath of the Wild and was like, hey, I'm going to give this another shot. Let's do it.
Yeah. And you giving it another shot made me want to give it another shot because you and I both played this light when it first came out.
Mm-hmm. On the Wii U. Both of us were the Wii U.
On the
U
Wii
boys.
U.
We were the two Wii U sales that the game
That's
had.
Right. That's right. And it didn't really click with either of us. And over the last couple of years, I guess sort of thoughtlessly, I've said like, oh, I don't like Breath of the Wild, or oh, it's overrated, or I don't like Zelda. And I'm like, I said that to you. I was like, yeah, I straight up don't like Zelda, which I don't think is true. But I often try to force myself to get into these games, thinking of them as I may be a different type of game than they really are. And about like 50% of the time, like 50-50 shot on any Zelda game, I might have a bad time because I don't set my expectations because I didn't grow up with Zelda.
Yeah.
But that I kind of wanted to like interview you sort of a very special guest, Locobones Knows Gaming Podcast, Jeremy Greer. I wanted to, you know, to pick your brain a little bit about not only playing Breath of the Wild, but your Zelda experience a little bit. Because, like I said, not somebody who grew up with Zelda. My initial exposure to the series was either just Link being in Smash on Super Smash Bros. On 64, because I didn't have a Nintendo. I mean, I had an NES, but we had like three games for it. It wasn't something that was really on my radar. It was either that or just seeing a friend playing Ocarina of Time as a kid Link and being like, hey, look, you can turn into a teenager in this, and be like, bro, we're gonna do that in real life in a couple years.
Oh wow. I was
so that was it. That was it for me. So
when that
you were
game
17
out.
Ocarina? All right, but when did you first experience, or what was your first exposure to the series?
So Zelda is one of my earliest gaming memories of all time. I remember being at my cousin's house. At the time I had an Atari, but I was very, very young. So I had like the classic wood panel Atari, and my cousin had just gotten this fucking dope ass Nintendo setup, and I went over there, and he had Mario, Zelda, Excitebike, like all of the classic Nintendo games. Thinking back, I don't like they were just as dirt poor as we were. I don't know how they had all those video games, but somebody got a good tax return and he made some good grades. Yeah. I guess I need to go back and like ask that dude, but we don't really speak. Anyway, we played some Mario, we played some Excitebike. He threw in Zelda, and I was like, immediately, I had never seen anything like that. Like I had like imagine seeing Zelda before you had really experienced any kind of fantasy media.
Okay, yeah.
So like no comic books, no like cartoons, yeah, right? Like maybe some He-Man and some Transformers kind of stuff.
Yeah,
but nothing like real formative yet. Like I think I was still really, really, really young. And I don't even know what age I was. I'd have to look up and see like when the Nintendo came out to even give you an idea. But it just the music, the way you moved around on the screen, like you had a sword, people said weird shit. Like that very first screen of like, it's dangerous to go alone, take this, which is kind of like a meme or a cliche nowadays, mm-hmm. was like, oh shit, this dude just gave me a fucking sword and sent me into the world. What is going to happen? And then
yeah,
people have talked about this a lot, but eventually I got my own Nintendo. For a while there, like I was like, can we go over to cousin blah blah blah's house? Like, I want to see my aunt and uncle. No, I want to play fucking Zelda. Eventually I got my own Nintendo, and it became that thing that you hear people talking about nowadays with Dark Souls or with any kind of obscure video games, of like the playground thing, mm-hmm. of, you know, somewhat on the playground told me, oh, you got to go get the raft if you want to get this. I'm like, there's a fucking raft? What are you talking about? Like, oh, that makes yeah. sense. I see all these weird things on the water. So like it was very, very extremely formative for me. Like
it's funny that it feels like even when I was in elementary school, even though I didn't play Ocarina of Time, which was the current one then, I feel like I still got all that playground gossip about the whatever random rumors, and we had Pokemon too, of course, back then, which was the big rumor mill. But it's funny how just like any game like that, kids are just gonna talk some stupid shit.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because kids love to talk. Like kids love telling, yeah. and they make up shit when they do it, and it's great.
Oh yeah, I remember my friend Dylan always talking about this other kid in our school, bringing him to his house and being like, "Dude, like I found XYZ thing from Legend of Zelda in my attic, and like it's real," and like just completely convinced Dylan that it was real. It's
oh, like, I oh love man, that shit! I found this yeah. sword, and it's got the word Link on the back of it. Like, yeah, what do yeah. you think this
shit
means?
Like that.
Oh, I love it, dude! That's so fucking good.
That's interesting that this was your introduction to fantasy. I mean, I don't know what mine would have been. It might have been Final Fantasy for all I know.
Yeah, like it's really difficult to nail that. Like that's the earliest thing that I can really remember though. And like eventually like way into fantasy books and all this other stuff. But like at the time yeah. I was super fucking young. And then over the years just kept with it. So like Zelda 2 came out and I just bounced the fuck off of Zelda 2. Like I had no idea. I was lucky enough to get a Game Boy for Christmas. And had Tetris, the weird Super Mario with the floaty jump on the Game mm-hmm. Boy, and Link's Awakening. And huh. Link's Awakening, I mean, the poor landfills of the batteries that I spent playing Link's Awakening is absolutely ridiculous. And then, like, fast forward to me being in sixth grade, I want to say this was around the time that Kurt Cobain died, was the time that Legend of Zelda Link to the Past came out.
Oh wow.
And you've never played Link to the Past, right?
I have.
Okay. So Link to the Past has a really short first act where like you can go collect the stuff and go fight the guy, and all of that like doesn't take very long, and then you get put into the dark world.
Mm-hmm.
And like I was going into this thinking, oh man, I can't believe this game. Like I'm having the best time. I'm so good at it. And then they sent me to the dark world and I showed up as a pink rabbit, and sixth grade Jeremy's mind was fucking blown. Like, oh shit. And then you can flip back and forth and all this other stuff. Absolutely blown away. By the time Ocarina of Time comes out, I'm working at a video game store. And I've told you this story about Lunar Silver Star Story, where I really drove home our pre-sales on Lunar yeah. for some reason. But did something very similar for Ocarina of Time. Was like super fucking hyped about that game. Could not, could not wait. Like the day that UPS dropped that game off the first time, I grabbed one and just like threw down 420s and like left. I was like, I'm out of here, folks. Go into the house.
Oh yeah, those were super expensive back then, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Games were like $60 or $70 at the time. And yeah, like just play the shit out of that game too. And I just, I've always been like a huge Zelda fan. And I have some weird holes in that too. So like, never played Majora's Mask for whatever reason.
Oh wow.
When some of the portable ones, like the season games that Capcom did, I've played those now, but I didn't play them until like 2004, I think. I don't even think I knew they existed at the time. Like I just somehow missed them. Gaming news was hard to get when I was young.
Oh yeah.
I was an avid, you know, Game Pro Nintendo Power reader, but like sometimes you would just not realize shit was happening. So, all of that music and all of those like tropes and the stories and the characters, I just grew up with it. Like it just shit just makes me happy. Like it just,
yeah,
works.
For so long, I think that's kind of where I always end up, maybe not finding what I'm looking for, is because I hear the way that people talk about the series and I want to feel that, but you can't fake it, you know, like you got to like really get into it. And I kept wanting to be a Zelda guy because it made so many people so happy. And then I would be like, wait, but I'm 17 playing this game that all my friends play when they were seven, and I'm not, and it's now it's a 10-year-old game and I'm not feeling it the way that they all felt it. And now I'm frustrated. I remember playing Ocarina of Time. Finally, I got on the Wii Virtual Console to appease all of my friends, to be like, all right, guys, I'm finally going to play this game. And I got to the first dungeon as older Link. So I did all the kid stuff, moved over, traveled through time, became adult Link. He's not an adult, but and was like, holy shit, this is pretty cool. Like to see how things have changed. And like, that's, I remember somebody showing me this at their house when we were kids and thinking, wow, that's scary. The whole world has been destroyed. What the heck is this game? And I remember two people breathing down my neck over my shoulder, telling me, no, don't do this, do that. Don't do this, do that. I was trying to do that dungeon, and I got frustrated during the boss fight of whatever that temple is. And because they kept being like, do this, do that. And for whatever reason, I just said, screw it. And I'd never picked it up again. I haven't played it since. I always meant to get it on 3DS to like give it another try. And there is always a part of me that wants to go back and play that because it was so present in my life as a kid, despite never having really played it. But I think I played Link to the Past, rented that shit from Gamefly years later. On the GBA cart, maybe?
Oh, word. Okay. Yeah, I was like, what, did you, like, rent a Nintendo 64? Did they do that? Like, I had a Gamefly, but I don't remember them doing Nintendo 64. N64. Like, they would have had to send you an SNES cartridge.
Yeah, yeah. So I did I don't even know if I beat it. I always, in my head, thought I beat it, but I really don't know if I did. So I played Link to the Past on that, and I remember playing it the night that I waited for the Wii out front of Target all night. And then I got Twilight Princess. So technically, Twilight Princess is my first full Zelda that I played with the motion controls.
And you see, like, I would say, you know, you were talking about Ocarina of Time and trying to play it on the Wii. I would never tell anybody to play Ocarina of Time at this point. Like, I just wouldn't. Like, that game was so foundational. Like, it basically invented third-person action games. Like, I mean, that wasn't the first game to do that, but it was the first one that did, you know, Z-targeting and all of those other things that made them kind of what we understand to be a third-person action game. And there's a direct line between that and Dark Souls, right? But, like, of all of the 3D Zeldas, like, I would probably, and Wind Waker is, like, my easy favorite. Like, Wind Waker is probably, I love the idea of sailing, like, there's a beautiful animation. Like, I'd love it so much. But I always point to people to that because the animation holds up, like, the story holds up, and it's pretty enough and modern enough that, like, you can kind of fake it. Like, there's some real jank to Ocarina of Time nowadays. And it's just, like, some real, like, bullshit hoops you have to go through. So it's weird that, like, I stayed up late waiting for that game, like took off work to play it, have the gold cartridge in my shed somewhere still, like, I think.
Damn. But
I don't know that I would, like, tell people to play it. Like, I would, now I think you could do a Shadow of the Colossus style complete remaster to that game and come out with something absolutely fucking gorgeous.
It would be really fantastic to see them do that. I don't know if they will, but
no, I don't think they will.
At least we should have access to these things on the Switch. I don't know why we don't. Even give us the 3DS version. Like the bottom screen was just a map.
Dude,
like,
I would buy all of the Zelda games for every Nintendo console if they would allow me to do so. Like I would be playing all of those probably right now. Instead of the weird JRPG I'm fucking putting my life into.
Yeah.
If I could do that. So it's, yeah, man, I wonder about the decision to do that. And also like Twilight Princess with the motion controls, because I was there. Mm-hmm. I got that day mm-hmm. one. I rode that wolf. What did you think about Twilight Princess?
I remember thinking that Link seemed kind of cool for once. Because again, my introduction to him was the one dude in Super Smash Bros. Who had a sword. So even though I didn't know who he was, I I was playing as him because I have never changed. I've always been into swords. So I was like, oh, you get to swing the sword in this one. Like, that's dope. Except like 3 hours in, I was like, this isn't that fun. I actually don't think I like the Wii that much. And it took me a couple months, but I did eventually finish Twilight Princess. And I really liked it. Like, I actually have a really like positive memory of the final battle in that game, which I guess I don't want to spoil it since we're not here to talk about Twilight Princess. But there's like a sword fight at the end of it. That's kind of sick. And that was a nice like cherry on top of that game. But again, I haven't played it since I was a teenager. Even when they remastered it on the Wii U, I did pick it up, but I played, again, maybe 3 hours of it. And I went, oh, okay. Wind Waker's better. Now that I've played Wind Waker, I know that one's better.
and it's weird because Twilight Princess was such a like a reaction video game because they got so much hate for Wind Waker mm-hmm. for being quote-unquote mm-hmm. childish just because it had kind of a cartoony style, which like and you're also playing a younger Link and you don't like jump to an age or anything, but like I don't know, man. There's something kind of badass about 11-year-old Link sailing all over the fucking flooded Hyrule and taking on Ganon and all these weird creatures. It's kind of fucking cool. And you get like so much expression out of that. But when they went to Twilight Princess, obviously they aged him up quite a bit. Everything is a little bit more realistic and not quite so exaggerated. Mm-hmm. And I liked it a lot because the thing that they did is they added all of that weird, like almost tech looking magic to it.
Yeah.
Which was what I think is a first for the series. I mean, I'm not like a Zelda historian. So if you guys think that I'm way off based on that, let me know. But, that was the first time I had really seen that in a Zelda game, and it was kind of blowing my mind a little bit of just having like, what the fuck is all of this like weird? Who is this Midna chick?
Yeah.
And then it was all over with because they had the best dungeon in the game, which was the one where you got the wheel that you would spin around on. Do you know what I'm talking about? I can't remember the name.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Because that was fucking awesome. Like that was super great. So yeah, like I have a lot of affection for Twilight Princess. I played it when it came out for Wii U, and then just fell immediately off of it because other shit was coming out, and the Wii U was kind of a pain in the ass to play. So
it was a pain in the ass to play, and obviously I think that we're probably in the minority here, but or at least I am. I didn't really enjoy playing my Switch until I bought a Pro Controller. I bought the Switch with all these games I was excited to play for it, and I did play through them. The first two games I picked up were Mario Odyssey and the Katamari Remaster, because you gotta get that shit. But I don't like the Joy-Cons that much. I just don't like the shape of like when you put them into the little like controller holder thing that came with it. It never felt good. I think that genuinely prevented me from like engaging with it more often. And then I got that Pro Controller finally, and I kept thinking, this is a waste of money. I'm not going to use this goddamn thing. And I've now put several hundred hours into my Switch since getting that controller. It made all the difference.
I thought when I got my Switch that I would never, ever play it off the dock. And then when I got it, I started playing Binding of Isaac on it. And I was having like a really good time just playing it. Like I was sitting on the couch, Autumn was doing something on the TV. I was playing Binding of Isaac. Everything's great. But that doesn't require like... like it requires button presses, but it's not like it didn't make me uncomfortable or anything. It was when I was playing Mario Maker 2 that I was like, yeah, this isn't gonna work, kid. Like I got other shit I need to do. So I bought the same. Yeah. I did the same thing. Pro Controller. I have not tried to play Breath of the Wild without the Switch Pro Controller, so I don't know how that would go. But I would imagine not very well for me.
It can't be worse than the gamepad.
Can't be worse. Literally can't. No.
Although I do remember it being very cool the night that I got Breath of the Wild, pulling out the gamepad, because we were recording Monster of the Week for one of the very first times ever when I got that, and I set up the Wii U in the same room. I don't remember why, but I didn't have a TV. I just had the fucking gamepad. And I played it on the gamepad and thought, this is so cool that I'm playing this whole big Zelda in my hand right now. This is wild. But obviously that didn't fucking last. So anyway, I guess that's now, we're getting closer to the topic at hand.
20 minutes into the podcast. We're doing good.
I really liked the intro to Breath of the Wild. I don't remember if I was hyped up for it. I know we were doing Chomp Chain at the time. I'm sure that it was talked about constantly. But I don't remember like a trailer or anything if that had pulled me in. But I really liked the intro area. And then the further in I got into Breath of the Wild on Wii U, my expectations were totally off. I kept trying to play it like it was Dark Souls, like physically, like do dodge rolls and block in the same way, and even the button presses, like I was screwing up. So I was getting myself really frustrated. I found that I was constantly trying to take shortcuts, like over mountains, and like getting myself killed because I didn't want to like walk around or like find an actual like route that could take me somewhere. I didn't want to engage with the game on its terms. I kept trying to do it on my terms, which I will say now, this game actually does a pretty good job of letting you approach everything the way that you want to, but you still have to meet it halfway on some of this stuff. And I had, I think, the wrong mindset going into it on the Wii U, and I had a bad time pretty much across the board. I beat 3 of the, I believe, 4 Divine Beasts. So I was, you know, a decent chunk of the game in, and just, you know, kind of fell off of it, never went back to it, and then decided that I didn't like it. But that's when you came along talking about the Switch version, and you actually said something in the Discord, like a story spoiler, about, you know, some character depth or growth or something like that. That was, like, enough for me to be like, all right, I gotta play this game finally.
Yeah, it's, you know, that opening area. Number one, I remember listening to Chomp Chain. I think all of you were pretty excited about it, because there was that one E3 where they kind of demoed all of the emergent gameplay, quote unquote, by like rolling rocks down into moblin camps and having stuff explode, and it just looks so pretty and looks so kind of different than what I was expecting from a Zelda game to be. Like everything was a lot more subdued, and it was just looked interesting. And I followed a similar path. I didn't know you had beat 3 of the 4 Divine Beasts. Like, that's pretty deep into the game. I want to say I did 1, and then I did the water, and then I beelined for the desert for some reason, and I got into the dungeon, but I was getting real frustrated trying to figure out how to like beat the dungeon. And when I played the most recent time, I couldn't remember if I had beaten the boss or not, but I definitely had not. And it was a similar kind of thing. Like, I just wasn't engaging with the game with what it wanted me to do. It wanted me to cook meals to give myself benefits, and I didn't really want to do that. It wanted me to sacrifice my weapons and just not get connected to any one weapon, and I just wouldn't do that. Like, I got mad when I had to pick up some shitty weapon when I just had a badass weapon. Because of that friction, which I think is understandable, like, I went into it like, I mean, in most Zelda games, like, you pick up a fucking sword and that's your sword for the rest of the game. you get items. And like, there's a part of me that still misses a little bit of that Zelda-ness to it, which is like, I go to a dungeon, I get a boomerang, I beat the boss with a boomerang, I go out in the world, all of a sudden I can hit statues with the boomerang and get access to new places or whatever. Yeah,
suddenly, right? You can boom your rang all over the place.
I can sometimes I have a tumerang. Something, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's, you know, you have to kind of meet the game halfway, like you said. And then picking it up for the Switch, I think there's a noticeable graphics bump, so that helped out quite a bit.
Yeah.
I think just not playing on the screen also helped out. The Switch Pro controller, I think, is a lot better with motion controls, and like the very small amount of motion controls that are in there, I think, just work better with that. Which helps quite a bit. And then just like, I've mentioned this a couple of times on Monster of the Week, of just like, okay, I have the time and the patience to sit here and do this, and I'm not wanting to guzzle the story. Like, picking up a video game and being like, oh, I want to upgrade this armor, and I need 5 ice wings to do it. Well, I get ice wings from bats in ice climates. Let's go climb this mountain and shoot some bats. And then just spending all day going on adventures and not trying to be like, oh, I want to see what the next thing in the story is necessarily.
Yeah.
And
I mean, my problem was I had chased down some of like the memories that you have to collect based on locations. I was in the completely wrong location thinking, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be. Why can't I trigger it? And then I was too close to the castle where there's lots of danger boys, and I was getting lasered up. I had gotten too close. I I got myself in a real pickle, Jeremy, and it made me angry, and it was my own damn fault.
Those guardians, man, those guardians are one of the coolest enemies of all time, and also want some of the scariest shit ever. Like, it's it's a real interesting combination.
When you run into them early game, I was like, oh, no!
Yeah, dude.
Get away from me!
Even in the late game, because I got pretty good at parrying them, which is like the easiest way to kill them. I mean, the easiest way is to go buy a bunch of ancient arrows and just shoot them, but the like the cool way is just to parry their little beam back, and you get like a slowdown effect and a great noise, and this it's so satisfying. But there's two loose conditions. One is like you don't try to parry at all, and it hits you, and it just takes away a bunch of your hearts. And then the second one is you try to parry, you don't time it quite right, and it destroys the shield that you're using, no matter how much durability it has.
Oof.
So like in the last like couple hours in the game, I would miss a parry and lose like a defense 52 shield and be like, I don't know where I'm going to get another one of those. That seemed like pretty rare, y'all. I was expecting to use that for a while. But just it's such a cool enemy design. Like, it's just so much, it's just fun. The story stuff, I think the thing that happened when I played Breath of the Wild was I disengaged from the story almost completely. I think the special, I don't know anything about the Japanese track, but the English voice acting is almost across the board terrible, with some notable exceptions that are great. So I just completely disengaged with it, didn't really care that I was saving Hyrule or anything. But as I started stumbling into those memories, I got like really interested in Zelda's story of all of this, because the story that it tells is of this young girl who is failing to meet up with prophecy. Like, it's nothing to do with Link whatsoever. Like, Link just happened to be of age and was like, oh yeah, you're the hero or whatever. You have the master sword. So like, you're the good guy. And also you need to watch out for my daughter, says the King of Hyrule. But right. Like, the actual story is like Zelda trying to find, I guess we're going to spoil stuff because I just want to talk about it. But Zelda like trying to find her abilities, trying to find her power, because they have a prophecy that the kingdom's going to be attacked by Ganon, and failing to do so publicly. Like, her dad gets mad at her. All of these like guardians that you meet throughout the game that are controlling the divine beast are being super nice, but you know, there's one of those memories where she's walking out of one of the shrine of wisdom or courage or whatever it is, and like she comes back and she just looks fucking heartbroken. And all of these people, like, this was her last chance to get her abilities, her powers unlocked. And they all just look crestfallen, but they're still trying to be so super supportive. And it's very nice and it's very sad. And I was like, the idea that this story is almost completely focused on her and not anything that, like, I'm doing shit, right? Like, but I'm also stuffing my pockets with 1,000 apples. So, like, I'm busy. Yeah. Meanwhile, Zelda is in the castle holding back Calamity. Let's just say that, you know what I'm saying?
And then, like, Link rolls up 100 hours later with a big-ass backpack full of apples.
Just fucking, just pockets overflowing with apples, man. It's just, I can't imagine the look that she would have given and be like, really, dude? Like, really? you had to go out and grind for that armor? Are you serious? It's maxed, like,
she's
out?
She sees him with the shield, with the master sword. She's like, oh, shit. My guy's here, and he's got that big stuff backpack. She's like, what's in the back? Did he bring, like, what is he about to do? And he does some big super mega slash, because he's, you know, he's got a big cool sword. And what do we see tumbling out of that fucking backpack? Apples and mushrooms.
Apples, mushrooms, nuts, some claws, some fangs, all kinds of weird shit, my dude. But yeah, like, so disengaging myself from the story so much, and then the game kind of presenting it to me in this, like, I don't want to say underhanded, but this very slight way made me way more interested in it. And then when you get to the last level, like, you get to Hyrule Castle, which is an area that you can approach pretty early if you're not scared off from it. And you can get some really good, like, sweet-ass loot in there if you do that. I didn't realize that. I held it all. Like, I really wanted Hyrule Castle to be the last thing I did in the game, so that's what I did. But looking back, I was like, oh, yeah, I could definitely have gone in there and got a baller-ass sword and, like, used that for a while. But you go in there and, like, you find her dad's diary, which talks about his...
Dad's diary?
You find dad's diary, dude. I'm serious. He talks about, like, I had to publicly shame her today because I found her looking at the weird technology instead of trying to unlock her, you know, sealing power. And, like, Link was there and I shamed her in front of him and I feel bad, but I have to do it. And then you find her diary and she's like, dad shamed me today, it sucked. And I'm like, oh god, you poor girl.
Oh, man. Oh,
you poor
man.
Girl.
And then Link's over there not saying shit, collecting apples.
Dude, there's a line that's actually reference. She talks about how frustrating it is to walk around with this knight that's supposed to protect her who doesn't say anything. And she's like, and it's so bad that she assumes that he hates her. She assumes that he's just as disappointed in her as she is in herself. And then eventually she figures out, oh, this boy liked to eat. So she cooks him a bunch of stuff and he confesses his feelings to her. This is canon. This is not me making it up or exaggerating.
This is real?
This is in the game. Yeah, this is in the game.
I love this so much. That's incredible.
It's so good.
He's a hungry guy.
So hungry. She's like, I finally figured out the way to get him to talk, which is to feed
him.
So
when he shows up at the castle with the cool sword and the backpack full of apples, she goes, no, okay. Yeah.
I get it. No. You wanted to bring
Thanks for showing up at all.
Yeah. I'm glad you made it. There's a lot of pie.
I can't currently cook, so I appreciate you bringing your own meal.
There's a lot of bakeries between the Shrine of Resurrection and Hyrule Castle. I'm glad you just walked. Yeah. Oh, you didn't. You have pies in there too. Okay, cool.
All right, my man. All right.
All of that stuff just worked really well.
I'm excited to see that. So I'm just at the intro right now. I just finished the Great Plateau, the starter tutorial area of the game. I'm very familiar with this part. I played it before. But damn, those Shadow of the Colossus vibes, my friend, are really fantastic. You walk out of, the Cave of Resurrection or whatever the hell you called it. You walk out of there. Link has no idea what's going on. He's in his damn shorts. You open up on this beautiful vista, green grass everywhere, hills, valleys. But most importantly, the ruins of the Temple of Time, like just off to the side there. You cannot miss that shit. And if there's anything I love, it's a beautiful ruined building in a grassy field, Jeremy. So even though I had gone there in the Wii U version, and I knew that I had to go back there later, it was the first thing I did. I talked to the old man, and then I went to the ruins, because it's just like, how do I stay away from there? And then I just wandered around for a while. Yeah. Because I think my problem before, you helped me understand this by the way you were talking about it, was that I didn't want to play the game, I wanted to beat the game, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to be like, oh yeah, I beat that game. I'm done with it. Which is, I get into a bad habit of that. And because I play a lot of JRPGs that are very long, I tend to not finish a lot of them. Or I tend to take a very long time to finish them because I'm not thinking about playing it. I'm thinking about beating it. And then I get impatient that I'm not at the end. I think that Animal Crossing, a game that you cannot beat, has really, playing that so much recently, has really reshaped my approach to games. And I found myself...
Gary Whitta has launched a successful celebrity call-in show on Animal Crossing. I think that's beating
that's
Animal
wild.
Crossing.
That's just wild, yeah.
There's a win condition now, and Gary Whitta made it.
Yes, he won it. But just engaging with a game because you like to spend time with it, and really finally understanding that has helped me, like, you know, reassess what I'm doing. I mean, we got nothing but time to play games these days. So, anyway, I'm back in Zelda, and I was just wandering around. Every time the old man would pop up, I'd talk to him. He'd tell me something fun. I chopped down a tree. I crossed a little ravine on the log that fell over. I had a lot of fun with that. Keep having really exciting encounters with the little goblin guys. And I'm sure that the game 100% set this up for me. But I had two really fun experiences just using the environment. The first one was I was just wandering around. I wasn't looking for anything in particular. I just kind of wanted to explore and pick up some sticks and whatever. And I see a little campfire. And then way up a hill is down this kind of like this path, like these mountains sort of convene around this one area. And then there's one of those skull things that the goblin people live in. I don't know the terms for any of this stuff. But so they got their camp, their hideout in this skull fortress over there. And, you know, they're all low-level enemies. It's not like it's a big deal or anything. And I'm thinking, ooh, I can, like, sneak up here. But it's windy as all hell in this area. And again, I assume that this wasn't just happenstance, and they did it on purpose because it worked out so damn well that I can't imagine it was by accident. But there's this little campfire, and nobody's there. And then there's all these guys up the hill. And between me and them is just a huge field of tall grass. And I could go sneak through that tall grass, or I could light my stick on fire and then light all the grass on fire and burn them out. And that's exactly what I did. The wind carried the fire up so fast. First of all, the first time I did it, it killed me because I got too excited.
That's so good. That's so good. Yeah.
And then I came back and I was like, I gotta go do that again. Holy shit. So I ran back over there. I lit the grass on fire and then I stepped back to a safe distance and I just watched the flames roll up on these dudes who, I mean, this is horribly inhumane, but this violates the Geneva Convention. They had nowhere to go. They were in a little like hideout. Like, so all these dudes just get swallowed up by smoke. A few of them ran inside and like got in where they were safe from the flames, from the burning grass. But once the fire went out, I charge up there with my fucking burning stick like you want some more, and I'm able to take down the other two dudes no sweat. Picked up so many arrows, so many bows. Forget about it. And I was living off of that supply for so long because it took me nothing. I used no supplies whatsoever to get through that, so it was fantastic. And my second encounter, again, I'm not very far into the game, so I don't have much to report on, but my second encounter was just after getting the time stop ability, where there was a bunch of stones placed, these boulders placed up high on a ledge, on a cliff edge, and down below there's a little camp of all these goblin guys, and I'm like, okay, yeah, the game just gave me this power. They want me to use it right now. They want me to, like, fuck these guys up. So I hit all these rocks. I'm doing this whole thing. Because every time I would hit a rock, I think I would hit it a little bit too hard. And I was like, all right, I don't think I hit them. I launched that sucker too far into the distance. So I did. There was, like, four or five different boulders above this camp. And I ended up hitting all of them. And then I finally, like, you know, get close enough. And I look down. And they're all laying on the ground around their fire. And I'm like, got them. So I start slowly, like, climbing down the cliff face to get down there. And all of a sudden, a fucking boulder gets thrown at me. And I'm like, oh, shit, what is going on? So I drop down, I turn. Every single one of them was still alive. They were all just sleeping around the campfire. Not a single one of my boulders hit them. And I almost walked into a death trap. Thankfully, I was able to scramble out of there. Almost cut off my exit with all the boulders I had dropped. But I was okay. So already I've had a really good time with that stuff.
I think that's the blessing and the curse of this game a little bit. Like, it's the, we haven't really talked about like the physics and the weird powers and stuff that they give you, but like they made this the kind of playground, which I hear a lot of people when they talk about Breath of the Wild compare it to like, oh, it's just an open world game. Mm-hmm. And it's an open world game with a lot of like physics based interactivity, which isn't new, but it's on a completely different level that I really think that this stuff works. Like, number one, it's easy and it doesn't really feel glitchy at all. Like, everything feels very smooth. And number two, like, there's a lot of interactivity. Like, the first time that I realized, like, okay, I have, so you see one of those skull hideouts, and like, you could see a chest in the back, and you're like, I want that fucking chest. I bet there's some dope gear in that chest. And you look and you're like, oh, there's barrels of TNT around. If I could set that on fire, I could kill all these dudes. And I'm like, oh, because fire arrows in the game, you can find fire arrows. I'm like, oh man, I don't have a fire arrow though. But I had flint and I had wood and I had a metal sword. So I made a campfire real quick, dropped the wood, put the flint beside it, hit the flint. It starts a campfire, which is a really easy way to like rest, right? Like, if you want to advance time, you can do that. Mm-hmm. You can also draw your bow with a normal arrow, dip the arrow into the fire, and all of a sudden it's a fire arrow. Then you can just shoot it and it will explode everywhere, and it's so fucking satisfying when all of those weird systems work. Throwing bombs in lakes to fish doesn't seem like very ecologically sound, but I want my fish. I need five haste fish to upgrade my haste armor. I gotta go.
Man, I shot an arrow through a campfire and then blew up one of those barrels after, because granted they were very close together, but I was like, will this work? And it fucking worked, and it was incredible. And I think, to go back to your comment about the interactivity of the world, I had heard a lot of people say that this is the best open world game ever. And every time I hear that, I'd be like, I think that comment is coming from somebody who doesn't play a lot of open world games. And this is coming from like Witcher 3 Superfan over here. But it's different. And now, even just a couple hours in, I think I see what they mean. And interactivity is the key, because in The Witcher 3, there is so much content everywhere you go. And some people feel very overwhelmed by that. But like, everywhere I go, I can find a side quest, I can find a monster hunt, I can find a treasure to find, whatever. There's content. But I can't do shit to the trees, I can't climb the trees, I can't do anything to the grass. This is like specific herbs and flowers I can pick up as items. It's a flat RPG world filled with consumables and shit like that. But I can't set the grass on fire, you know? Like, I can't drop a boulder on somebody's camp. Like, things like that I mean, it sounds simple, but being able to interact with the physics of an entire open world is like pretty nuts.
It's crazy. And I started playing Dragon Quest XI immediately after Breath of the Wild and was like, I hadn't played a JRPG in quite some time. And I feel like in a lot of ways, like comparing it to something like Persona 5, Dragon Quest XI feels like it's almost a throwback to a JRPG style. That's
for sure
that not like relatively modern. I think they did that very specifically on purpose. But just like the, like, oh, there's something I can go pick up. It's a shiny in the world. I'm going to go click on it. And my character does a really slow animation to pick it up and I get a thing. And it didn't like, oh, what do I do with this thing? Like, I have no idea. And there's some of that in Breath of the Wild, but everything feels like, I don't know, like this, that idea of you saw a mountain and you could climb it. Like, it's a bad idea that you do that right now, but you did it and you could get up to the top and find something up there. There's always something going on. You know, there's very, very rare that you don't find anything. And I think
sometimes you find poo-poo seeds.
Find poo-poo seeds, man. You can find those poo-poo seeds all the time.
I found a couple poo-poo seeds right off the bat, and I thought that I was so slick. I wonder how many people listening to this bonus episode are like, what is any of this that they're talking about?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, little collectibles around the world that are hidden. And
they're just neat little puzzles, right? Like, you see two statues made out of blocks. One of the statues is missing a block to make it look like the other statue. You find this block, and you put it in the right place, and then, boop, you get a poo-poo seed.
Yeah, or like, jumping into a lake, there's like a ring of like pond whatever plants lily pads or some shit.
Yeah,
you just, I was like, oh, that's a circle, I want to jump in the circle. I jumped in the circle and I got a little reward for it. I was like, oh hey,
it's hilarious, man. That's great. And they're everywhere, Chris. Like, I thought I was being like a vacuum cleaner when it came to that stuff and just sucking up just hundreds of them, because I had so many. And then I happened to look up, and I knew that there was a lot in the game, and I knew that there was no point in, like, I remember when the game came out, people were saying, like, yeah, even if you wanted to maximize your stuff, you don't have to find all of them, which I think is a really neat game design of, like, hey, nobody's going to find all of this stuff. Let's put enough just everywhere so that people stumble around it and feel good about themselves.
Yeah.
But there's, like, almost 1,000. And I have the Heroes Quest DLC, which gives you, I would almost recommend buying this just for this feature alone.
For the motorcycle?
No, the motorcycle is impossible to get. Dude, don't even fucking bother. But you can pull up the map and you can bring up a route of everywhere that you've been in the game world. And what that does is like, oh, I'm in like this plane. And I bring up that map and I look at it and I'm like, oh, there's like some swamps over there that I haven't explored. Let's go look at those swamps. Yeah. And I thought I was doing really, really fucking good. I think I only got up to like 240 or something.
Oh, wow.
Like, it's crazy, which is still way too many. That's like 24 weapons and 16 bows and like five or six shields. It's insane, dude.
So you're really out here flexing when I'm out here with my sticks fighting the big stone boys who come out of the floor.
Oh yeah! Once you start finding, like, there's some super high level enemies that are really, really difficult at first, but once you start figuring out how to kill those, they drop a bow that has extremely high attack and also shoots 5 arrows at once. But just Ooh. It just costs you the one. So like anything that you hit is immediately dead.
So speaking of the big stone boys, so they're like big stone golem creatures that just come out of the ground if you're in the forest or wherever. I remember running into those in the Wii U version, and I had killed some of them in that version as well. But ran into them last night. I was playing, ran into one, and I had like nothing on me. But it popped out of the ground. I was like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. I was trying to run away from it. And then night fell, and some skeletons popped out of the ground too. And I got really scared, so I ran back in the direction I had just come from. Ran back into the stone boy, and I got really nervous. So they have, or this one in particular had a, I don't know if they all are like this, had like a black, like obsidian spot on its back that was different from the regular colored stone that was the rest of this creature's body. And I hit it with an arrow, thinking, I mean, that's clearly got to be its weak spot, right? And it made the most satisfying, like, ding noise as it like did the critical hit on him. And the stone golem just like kind of like crouches down, falls over, and then I climbed on his back. And I fought him that way, and I was able to take him down eventually. And it gave me that, again, Shadow of the Colossus rush. But that made me feel, whereas the first time I played the game, I felt like I was constantly being punished for the way I wanted to play. This time I felt like I was constantly being rewarded for the way I wanted to play, or I kept wanting to retry. Like when I would lose, I kept wanting to go back and try it again and figure out a different solution to the combat puzzle, essentially. So across the board, it's been a very rewarding experience the second time around.
There's so one of my favorite interactions in the game ever is with one of those guys. Did you go through the fire area? I can't remember, like the Death Mountain area at all.
I don't think I've been there yet, but I'm pretty sure I went there in my last game.
So the gimmick of that area is that it's super hot and you have to like use stuff to cool yourself down constantly, mm-hmm. or you have to like do what I did, which is just go buy the armor and not have to worry about it ever. But as I was walking around and I'm like exploring, I've got my armor on. So I'm like, I'm just walking around and trying to find some seeds and just doing my shit, you know. I get into like an open area and I'm like, yeah, this looks like one of those rock guys. And sure enough, the dude pops out. Well, by this time, I'm loaded up on bomb arrows, right?
Ooh.
So that little obsidian thing that you talked about, I'm like, well, I'm just going to fucking shoot my bomb arrow at it and then jump up on his back and wail him. This will be dead in no time. Chris, it's very hot outside.
Yes.
So when I equip my bomb arrow and pull it back, it explodes and I go flying off the cliff in the other direction. And that's how I learned you can't use bomb arrows in the Death Mountain area, which I thought was really, really good.
Oh, I love
that the game lets you, so like you mentioned, like going through in different ways and stuff. The shrines are a really good example of this, of just here's an obvious puzzle and here's a way that you can do it. But you don't actually have to do it that way. Like if you can figure out a way to get to the end, you can get that way. Like it's, mm-hmm. it's crazy. And there's ways to shortcut a bunch of stuff. I got into a shrine that it obviously wanted me to like use like this wind tunnel thing to get an item to a certain spot or whatever before like a thing, before a platform would go back down and I couldn't reach the next thing. But I just like ate a bunch of stamina stuff and I dropped the ball in the right place and just ran my ass off and didn't do any of the puzzle stuff. And it worked fine. It was great.
That's great.
Remember that
puzzle where you just had to turn the Wii U gamepad upside down in order to get it right?
Yep. Any of the motion control stuff you can do that with, which I think is very hilarious. Wow. Yeah. There is one tower that is surrounded by enemies. That's just like, I mean, like a shitload of enemies and that weird like purple ooze stuff that's everywhere.
Oh, I remember that. And I died a lot there and I probably should have left it the fuck alone, but I didn't.
And you know, you're if you struggle against it, you're like, man, what the fuck is this? But I happen to, there's a power in the game that lets you do like this huge, huge jump. You'll get it eventually. And then it just sends you flying in the air. So I was on a mountain when I saw the tower. So I used that and I floated over. And then by the time I hit the side of it, I was already halfway up. I rested, regained my stamina, climbed up. I didn't kill a single enemy. And then when I was ready to leave, I just jumped off and floated over them. Like I never even went back. There could be like treasure chest or Korok seeds or whatever. Yeah. I never went back. Never bothered going back. So the game that gives you the flexibility to do that is super interesting. Like I think that stuff is super fun.
In one of the very first dungeons where you learn the bomb skill, there's those like big pillars that are like pulling in and out the like, pistons, and they're like launching the bombs into the air.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing my bomb blow up to do the puzzle the way I'm supposed to do. And this is a very, very simple thing that I just look over and I see there's these other pistons doing their thing on the other side, but there's no reason for me to interact with them. And I'm just seeing the ball launch through the air back and forth, and I'm like, What if me go jump ball?
What if Link ball?
What if Link ball? What if Link do jump high ball on there? And I ran over and Link do ball jump high on there. I got onto the thing and it just launched me into the air. I was like, oh fuck, all right, here we are. And then I landed up on the ledge where the treasure chest is, like you're clearly supposed to do. But it just felt so silly and in a really good way. And again, not very far in, but all of my experiences so far have been like colored with that kind of I don't know thing.
Yeah, like there's a bunch of stuff like that. Like you can build weird flying contraptions if you want to. Like if you've looked at any of the, if you've killed any of the little Octoroks, the little dudes that spit rocks at you from water, they leave you Octorok balloons that you can hold in your hands and attach to objects, and they literally just float in the air.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So you could like. And I did this at one point. Like you could get one of those like TNT things, attach it to, you know, attach a balloon to it, get your Korok leaf out and like blow it over some enemies, shoot the balloon, and the thing drops and explodes and all your enemies are dead. Like, you can do some weird shit.
Holy shit.
I mean, but that, like, and all of the weird stuff that you can do with like stasis as an idea has, I don't think, ever been in a Zelda game before, and is like kind of, and they don't even really use it a whole lot in the game, but like what they do with it is great. Like the idea that it's building up this kinetic energy is just like, it's just crazy.
Yeah. Like,
I think most of the speed runs of the game are literally getting on a rock or freezing a rock, hitting it 5,000 times, getting on top of it, and when it pops, like you just go flying to Hyrule Castle. Like that's,
yeah.
And like imagine Link, that Link showing up, and and Zelda's like, "You need a sword. Yeah. You need to get a sword now."
He's still in his shorts, and he's still got a bag of apples because he did stop off for a quick
stop at
the
bakery. Yeah, he did stop and get some good apples. But yeah.
I mean, you got super like math, not math. Sorry, excuse me. You got spreadsheet into this game, and I know you love your spreadsheets.
I do.
Just talk about it. Tell Local Bones Knows Gaming podcast listeners about the spreadsheet game,
dude. I guess
what compelled you to do it?
There's something about. I was never compelled to upgrade all of my armor in Dark Souls, but the armor that I liked the most. Was the armor that I wanted to upgrade. Here, the things that happen with armor is that as you upgrade them, they unlock additional abilities.
Oh.
So your swim armor that you might have by now, if you upgrade it a little bit, like you may take like seriously reduced stamina to dash through the water. Your stealth armor that you can buy pretty early on if you save up the money to do so, that if you upgrade it, you all of a sudden will move like twice as fast at night.
Ooh, I do remember that because Link looks like a beautiful lady ninja when he wears it.
Link is so androgynous in this game. Yeah. And I love it, dude. Like, it's so great. Like, he's beautiful. Like, he's a beautiful boy. And like, you just kind of want to be him. But I think that was really, it was the abilities and then all of the armor kind of having a purpose and looking pretty fresh to death. And also just like I would be killing monsters anyway and grabbing all of their pieces and parts, and just so when you meet the fairy that upgrades all of your armor, it was just there. And then you look at like how much it's going to upgrade, and like it's a huge difference in defense, which towards the end of the game, like, you will actually kind of be thankful for. So just, you know, going to the fairy being like, "Oh, I need like 3 Hyrox toenails or whatever." Like, okay, I remember where those 3 big bad boys are, and I'm gonna go kill them real quick. And stuff like that. Like, I just got way into that game, way into hell that yeah. part of the game.
Oh, hell yeah!
The Lynels are like the game exposes you to a Lynel pretty early on if you go through the water area. Like, they tell you to go get the shock arrows at the top of the cliff where that dude is, like that centaur is shooting at you or whatever. And they're super scary, but like, by the time you get to a certain point and you figure out like, oh, I could just parry them and just drink a bunch of super attack juice, like, I'm going to fuck them up. And it's so satisfying to do so. And I had done that, had a really cool moment where I had done a lot of that to upgrade armor. I was just like, oh, I need this stuff. Like, it's time. I'm going to go. I know where I've marked them all on my map. I'm going to go execute all of the Lynels in Hyrule.
Yeah, and, forget about it.
When I went to the castle, I was just cruising around and I'm like, oh, this is cool. I went into this area and then like gates locked me in, and it was like first gatehouse or gatekeeper house or whatever. And then a fucking Lynel dropped from nowhere. And I was like, you know, if I had not actually fought one of these, I would be fucking shitting a brick right now. Yeah. This would be terrifying. But like, I just like switched to my armor real quick, ate some attack up the juice and was like, all right, let's do this. And it was super fun.
Clean house. So the music is pretty sparse from what I remember in this game.
Mm-hmm.
There is one of the memories I have a memory of this. One of the flashbacks, there is a very light piece of music that is just like the main Zelda theme, just played on single piano, like very slow keys. I've never been able to find it on YouTube or anything like that, but it was like the most beautiful thing I'd ever heard in my life. And this game, like the music, though few and far between when the songs do play, they're always amazing. But I mean, I guess half the time it's just piano shit anyway. But the thing I really wanted or was really impressed by this afternoon, I played for a little while with headphones in, which I had not done before, and holy shit, the sound design in this game is incredible.
Oh dude, like, it's so good.
It's out of this world. Even just, I mean, forget about the sounds that it makes when you cook, like very deliberate like little tunes and sound effects. or when you get a critical hit or anything like that. But just, I had one of the clubs, the wooden clubs, and like a shitty wooden shield, and the sound that Link was making walking through the glass, clanking along, like he was covered in wooden sticks or whatever. And then at one point I had like a skeleton arm as a sword, and that was making a different bone sound. And then the sound of the sword against the wood, a metal sword against the wood shield, like everything, the sound of him moving changed with everything that I had equipped. And I never would have noticed it if I didn't pop the headphones in. And I was so impressed by that, that it like blew me away. And now everywhere I go, I'm like paying attention to all these little noises, because I know that they put the time in to like reflect the difference.
They, you can get sand and snow boots in the game. Ooh. And the sound of you trudging through snow is different if you're wearing just like normal ass sneakers versus the snow boots that you can find. Like, which I would imagine, like, I've only been in snow a handful of times in my life, but I would imagine is fairly accurate. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just sounds different if you're walking on top of the snow than trudging inside of it. A lot of like, I think that's one of the things that the game really excels at, is just a lot of really small details. One time, like, you know how when you open a chest, sometimes Link will just very like almost condescendingly just kick it open. The next time you get to a chest, just take off all your clothes and do that. Because he'll kick it, and then it'll hurt his foot. Because
the very like, first chest that I opened, I kicked it, and he did that. He did a little hop, like, oh, shit. And then the next chest that I opened, he didn't kick it. And I was like, did he just learn a lesson? Like, was that a one-and-done animation where he's not going to kick it again? But no, he has done it since. But I just thought, did Link just learn a very valuable lesson?
But there's just all kinds of really small details with it, not only in the sound design and the animation. There's some really cool idle animations that are different dependent on what you're wearing, especially with some of the DLC armor, which is very hilarious. Some of the DLC armor you get will change people's reactions to you. So, like, there's a Ganon set that you can get that has really, really low defense, but it's really, really stealthy. And if you go up to an NPC and just, like, talk to them, they'll go, whoa! Oh, hey! Like, it'll freak them out.
Yeah.
I've heard that there's something like that for Tinkle, who is the weird kind of...
The green guy?
Green fairy wannabe dude. And yeah. But I never got around to getting all of his equipment, so I just never... Some of that stuff was, like, a lot of the DLC stuff was just, oh, hey, go over here, and it will give you a tip about where some stuff is, and then go over there and find the chest that it's in. Like, it wasn't real deep, so...
You ever find yourself leaving a lot of trash in these ancient shrines? There's, like, a, you know, there's a guiding voice speaking to you, like, Link, go here. I'm like, all right, cool. And I go in there, and they're like, you have honored us by coming here and completing this puzzle. I'm like, yeah, man, sorry. I left a bunch of junk back over there because I only had sticks. You had a good sword, but my inventory was full, so I dropped a bunch of shit on the ground in here. Sorry, everybody.
There's some like 3/4 broken bows over there. You're not going to really want to like use those. Maybe you can give them to a kid or something. I don't know. Yeah, like, should kids have bows? I feel like I'm a kid. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. I'm gonna take another page out of your Don't Give Up Skeleton book here.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask you, what do you want to see in the sequel? Because there is a Breath of the Wild 2 confirmed, right? Am I right?
Confirmed. Yeah. When you finish this game, go watch that trailer, and I dare you not to be super excited about it. So.
All right. I don't even know if I've seen the trailer.
I find that hard to believe.
It's Local Bones Knows the Gaming Podcast. I probably just didn't care. But now I'm excited to be excited. But yeah, tell me what you want from the next installment. Some, I mean, not necessarily story wise or anything like that, but maybe some features or whatever.
So I absolutely love all of the physics interactions. I love the open world nature. I love the fact that this game lets you go pretty much any direction that you want to without any kind of gating or of any kind. Like, there's some real like subtle stuff. There's some pretty obvious stuff of like, oh, these monsters are really tough. Maybe I should go somewhere else. They do a really good job of like guiding you through the first few areas. Like you pretty much will always end up like they give you some quests. There's like, okay, you can go over here. But one of my internet buds, Savesh, like he told me that when this game came out, him and his wife were playing it, and his wife was like all into it, everything turned on, like she's warping everywhere, and he decided to like, I don't have any markers on. I'm just going to talk to people. I'm going to try to find, I'm never going to warp. Like, I'm just going to walk everywhere. Like that kind of thing. Like, it was two different experiences, which I find really, really interesting. All of that said, for Breath of the Wild 2, like, I don't want to collect 162 things from monsters anymore.
Right.
Like, I feel like some of that, like, especially it would have, like, I don't know how long it took them to build this, like, bespoke world that was so interesting. But I would be very interested in, like, a more directed experience. Like I talked about kind of missing some of those Zelda dungeons, and I do like the Divine Beast are barely even dungeons. Like, I feel like compared to some of the previous stuff we've seen, it's just, there's just not a lot to them.
No.
And that's kind of a bummer. I would like to see more of a directed plot focus even. Like, I want it to be, I want it to be something in a different direction.
I think it, in a way, I don't want to say it has to, but it's so rare that they, I mean, is this the only Zelda with a 2 in it?
So,
Zelda 2, the second one, but like...
But like, Majora's Mask is a direct sequel the first one.
I know that's a direct sequel, but it's a different name, you know? Yeah,
but this is going to be like, Zelda 2 is not a direct sequel for Zelda 1, from what I understand. And you can get, fucking lost in some of this stuff, like... Apparently, this is like the first game of the series chronologically, or something. Uh-huh. Like, it's fucking wild. Like, I have not broken out my Hyrule history yet, but I'm getting.
You're gonna have to. I think
I'm gonna watch a lore
video for part two of this. Yeah.
So yeah, I guess like I want that more directed experience. Like, I want some more dungeons. I would love to see Zelda play a much bigger part of it. I'd love to see them get a little bit more. Like, people saw the trailer and were like, oh, we're going to be able to play as Zelda, or it's going to be a huge co-op focus, which I think is people kind of fooling themselves a little bit. Like, I just wouldn't read that much into anything at this point. That said, I would like to personally play as Zelda and see what she can do. Like, even if it's like a different power set or whatever, like, or just the ability to be like, no. Like, we're from the start of the game. Like, we're just Zelda. Like, events of the last game were fine. Like, everybody, the world was saved. Now they're setting out on a new adventure, who you want to be, right? Like, that would be super dope.
From what I kind of understand, you know, Majora's Mask came out of the fact that they had all these assets that they can just reuse. So let's just make another game, let's turn another game around, and then they get a little bit weird with it because they don't have to develop as much going into it. I wonder if Breath of the Wild 2 will be like that. Maybe it is a game where you play as Zelda because it is a... it's building off of the engine, off of what they've already established development-wise for the first game, that now they can say, all right, now we've established the canvas. We'll give you a new set of paints, and you can go for it. I mean, obviously, I don't have any expectations or desires yet because, you know, I don't know. I hope it's good. I hope it's something that I can be excited for after playing this. That's about all I got with that. But it'll be interesting. If is this the next... mainline thing, or is this just a like, you know, a step sideways from where they are? I mean, even if it's a great step sideways, although they're not going to be held back now because they had to develop Breath of the Wild for Wii U. not exactly like, you know, the Switch isn't a powerhouse, but it's better than the Wii U. And, you know, I'm not to say that there's anything wrong with the way that the product is now, but like, it clearly was held back by the fact that it was on Wii U.
very much so. I'm curious. This is not on this subject at all, but you mentioned playing Twilight Princess and being like, oh, I want to swing the sword now, and just getting tired because swinging the sword in that game was basically just a replacement for pressing A. Like, you weren't really doing anything. Did you play Skyward Sword? Did you go back to the well?
I've never played Skyward Sword. No.
It's if you still have your Wii U hooked up, which is a big ask. Like,
it's the gamepad is on the floor. In front of my TV. I think I just put the Wii U away because I played Fatal Frame a couple months ago. But it's around. It's around.
Skyward Sword, you had to have the little Motion Plus thing, which they Best Buy was doing. There was some fishing game that you could buy for like, they discounted it to like $5, but it included like the Wiimote with the Motion Plus thing, which was like a $70 controller at the time. Oh. So like I bought four of those because it was $20.
Oh,
why not?
Shit.
I think I still have a couple new in a box too somewhere. Playing Skyward Sword was very much like that was like, oh, the sword is in my hand and I am slashing and Link is doing the slash. And it felt really, really cool. I got to a skill level where I got to literally the last boss and it was expecting me to do some shit that I could not do. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna put this down. But Skyward Sword is a super weird and interesting game itself that has...
Is that a direct sequel to Twilight Princess?
No, it's a total separate thing. Like, and they... Okay. Like, the... Skyward Sword... Like, I have a weird affection for that game because it's so fucking pretty. Like, it's almost like a watercolor painting, but, like,
Oh.
Dude, it's a weirdly gorgeous game. Like, if I ever try to start emulating stuff, like, I'm going to try to go to that and up-res that bad boy at some point. Nintendo, just make all your old games new every year for me, please. Yeah, that's what
please,
I'm looking for.
Please. Thanks. Appreciate it. All right. Well, I guess that's that. Do you have any final thoughts you want to get out about Breath of the Wild? The legend of Zelda.
It's such a weird game that hit me at exactly the right time in my life. I saw some people on Twitter the other day talking about like how this is their favorite Zelda game of all time. It's something like I can definitely see it. Like I can absolutely see how this is someone's favorite Zelda game of all time. It's just incredibly special. Like I think they did just a fantastic job top to bottom on this thing. And like the only thing I can really complain about it is like there's not more, right?
Yeah.
Like I would,
there's gonna be, I think.
But I mean, there's not like I wanted like when the DLC I was like, oh, they're probably gonna add like dungeons or do more bosses, and there's apparently not a whole lot of that as like challenge mode stuff, which is interesting. Like there's. I played through part of the challenge mode and I got so many levels in because they're basically like little arenas that you have to clear out real quick, but they don't give you any resources. Uh-huh. So it's kind of almost like a survival mode, which was really interesting.
Interesting.
But I got to, you carry the stuff that you pick up in one arena to the next. So like if you could conserve all your resources, you do really well. And I got to one at the first like quote unquote boss, which is one of those rock monsters that you talked about, and had absolutely nothing, and didn't want to, because I knew I had to keep going, didn't want to use my weapons on anything, so I had to bait him into destroying his own arms, and then when he bent over, throw rocks at the thing, at the little obsidian thing, and it worked. Like, you can do it. It just took fucking forever. But anyway, it's again, the only thing I complain about is there's not more in the game, and there's a whole fucking lot in the game. So it's a 10 out of 10 to me, Local Bones. I don't know about you. I got a 10 out of 10.
Hell yeah. On Local Bones Knows Game Podcast, if it's not 10 out of 10, it's a bad game. So I'll go ahead and give this one 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
And, all right.
All digi,
Jeremy,
no potty.
Thank you.
All digi, no potty.
All digi, no potty. Thank you, Jeremy, for joining me on this very special episode of the Local Bones Knows Game Podcast. 1 million subscriber special. Very special guest. Happy to have you here. Happy to have 1 million subscriber. thank you, everybody, for listening. If you liked this, tell your friends about it, because they can check it out on patreon.com/monsteroftheweek. We're recording a Zelda podcast, 2 years after Breath of the Wild came out? I'm a Zelda newbie. So I'm talking out my ass this whole time. But if you enjoy this, let us know, in the Discord and the usual places where you're usually talking to us. And we can, we'd like to talk about other games. We'd like to talk about other topics, but just sort of more off the cuff. Even though I did try to steal Jeremy's Don't Give Up Skeleton style a little bit for this one. Didn't do a very good job. But if you like it, let us know. Maybe we'll do more. And thanks, Jeremy. This was fun.
Later, everybody.